time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thank you very much for tuning in. Another beautiful day out there today. Oh, my gosh, it is really chilly out there. Make sure you bundle up. I had the great experience this morning. My parking brake was frozen, so that was a fun adventure. All right, we're broadcasting live this morning at the State House in Montpelier. Today will be a historic day here at the State House. It'll be a historic day for Vermont. The election of the next governor will be happening in just a couple of hours here, maybe just a little over an hour from now, in fact. The members, the 180 members of the Vermont Assembly here will be joining together in a joint session, and they will be casting their ballots. This is expected to be a secret ballot for the election of the next governor. You'll recall that at the November election, no candidate received 50% of the vote. That, by the rules of the Constitution, throws the race here into the Vermont legislature. The top vote-getter was the incumbent Democrat Peter Shumlin, came in about 2,500 votes or so ahead of his Republican challenger, Scott Milne. And but as a result of that, and Dan Feliciano got a little over 4% in the vote, which was enough to put the race into the legislature. A lot of expectation here today that this that the democratically controlled legislature will give this race to Governor Shumlin, and he will be serving his third term. Whoever the governor is, we do, as I said, expect that it'll be Governor Shumlin. Will be giving the inaugural address. That'll be coming up this afternoon at about 1:30, and we will be carrying that live here on WDEV AM and FM. Joining us on the program this morning, we're anticipating shortly the arrival of the Senate Majority Leader. Phil Baruth is going to be joining us on the program this morning. Also, later this hour, we'll talk with Representative Tony Klein. He is a Democrat from East Montpelier, chair of the House Natural Resources Committee, and he's going to be joining us coming up later this hour. Next hour, we're going to be chatting with Paul Burns, and he is with the Vermont Public Interest Research Group. And it's our great luck that Senator Phil Baruth is joining us, as we had planned to have him on this morning. We'll take your phone calls this morning at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Toll free 877-291-8255. All right, we're going to keep our interview brief with the senator, because I know he's got an awful lot to do this morning. Senate Majority Leader Phil Baruth, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
So no stories today. How are you?
No stories?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for
yeah.
me. No,
yeah.
no.
Yeah. Last time we had it, that was wonderful. Thank you for doing that over the holidays.
Sure.
So tell us, what's the expectation? What should people expect is going to happen here today?
Be sure is going to happen is we will have a vote. What's a little up in the air is how much debate there will be, how many motions, how many attempts to suspend the rules. All those things are in flux. I think John Bloomer, who's the Senate secretary, he's kind of the controlling parliamentarian of this gubernatorial ballot. He's of the opinion that it needs to be a not an open roll call, but a written ballot that is not announced. In other words, I wouldn't at all call it a secret ballot, but one in which your vote as a legislator is not publicized. So that being the case, Phil Scott will rule based on that. And then the question is there a move to overrule Phil Scott on that question?
Okay. Could that actually go anywhere in your view? Okay.
No, we refer to that in the Senate as the nuclear option, because if you think about it, the last thing you want to do is start overruling the president of the Senate. In this case, the president of the Senate is the president of the joint session. So I think people are, by and large, very respectful of Phil Scott's rulings in general, uh-huh. but also just the institution itself. The question really is, will people use the motion to overrule as a moment to air their views? You know, it's a tough question, and some people have a tough situation back home, and they want to communicate to their people how they feel. I'm hoping people will adopt a less is more sort of attitude about how and when to speak.
One would anticipate, though, if one person starts talking, that might open the floodgates.
Yeah, and you've seen that in this building, haven't you?
Yeah. Let's, if I can just briefly touch on a couple of other issues that will be happening, presumably after this all, the dust here settles on all of this. A couple of the issues include this huge budget deficit.
Right.
So what's the Senate Democratic approach? You guys have such a huge majority over there. What are some of the thoughts you guys are having on that?
Well, I think all of us are looking to the governor to lay out his approach. But basically, when I came in 4 years ago, we had a $100 million deficit then. Then the next year, I think we had a $60 million deficit. And then the next year, we had a $50 million. Now we got $100 million. So we have, over the last 4 or 5 years, we have cut. It's not to say that there aren't more efficiencies that can be found, but we are getting to the point where if we tried to close the entire $100 million gap simply with cuts, we would be looking at eliminating very basic, crucial services that people depend on, like mental health services, LIHEAP, helping people who can't afford fuel oil in the winter. It was damn cold out this morning.
Right.
If you imagine that Vermont all of a sudden announced it wasn't putting forward the $6 million it puts into low-income fuel assistance, that's going to not just hurt people, that could potentially kill people. So I think personally that it's going to wind up being a mix of cuts, very judicious, smart cuts in state government, but also some new revenue. And there you look to the governor for what is he willing to sign.
Mm-hmm. What are the options on that are realistic?
You know, a couple of years ago, suddenly he came out with break open tickets.
Right.
So I think it's fair to say that Peter Shulman, regardless of the rhetoric in the last several months, Peter Shulman has been extremely reluctant to raise what he calls broad-based taxes. And that's just a fact. So some smaller niche taxes have gone up. The property tax has risen because it's driven by education. But the things where Peter Shulman had, real clear control, he has been reluctant to raise those taxes. So I imagine that will continue to be the case. So I think he probably and his team will propose a couple more of these more niche taxes based on people's usage of something that the state doesn't necessarily have an interest in supporting.
Right. Or that could be considered somehow broad-based,
right,
like break-open tickets. The governor announced last month he wasn't going to move forward on this financing of single-payer health care. Are Senate Democrats relieved, upset? What are they about that?
We're a Big Ten party, the Democrats, so I think you could find all of those responses in our caucus. I think most of us in the Democratic Party, we've been supporters of single payer as a way to reach universal coverage and to achieve real, not just illusory, but real savings in healthcare costs. So I was on the school board in Burlington for 4 years. Anybody who's been on their select board or a city councilor will tell you that the number one thing that is exploding those municipal budgets or other sorts of budgets like that is healthcare costs. So single payer was never some utopian dream, to have the workers singing and the animals all marching off into the sunset. It was always about achieving real solid cost efficiencies and universal coverage. So if we're not going to have single payer right now, I'm looking for ways to do those two things. We have about 24,000 people left uncovered because the Affordable Care Act has cut in half our number of uninsured in the last year. That's good.
Yeah.
But we need to keep working on that 24,000 number. Trouble is, that's still very expensive. So I imagine that'll be an incremental thing, as we did with Dr. Dinosaur and Catamount. And so we'll probably find a way to cover another chunk of those going forward, and at the same time try to continue the shift away from having fee-for-service, which really incentivizes tests and procedures that people may not really need.
Property taxes, you're going to wait for the governor to present something? You're going to wait for the speaker to present something? What's the game plan on that?
You know, things move sometimes simultaneously in the House and the Senate. Sometimes there's agreement that one or the other body will take the lead. It seems to me, I haven't heard Shep Smith and John Campbell shake hands on this, but it seems to me that the House is leading on that. The Ways and Means Committee seems to be pushing forward with property tax more aggressively than our Finance Committee. Our Finance Committee, on the other hand, I think has done more work on the health care solutions that can be worked on now that single payer as such is not on the governor's agenda. So maybe that will wind up being the distribution of duty as more property tax work sooner in the House and then the reverse with health care in the Senate.
We're going to be talking later with a couple of people about the carbon tax.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
You know, I'm not a fan of it, and I can hear some of my friends' heads exploding when I say that, because I do believe climate change is a pressing problem. I believe it's a problem that in the 21st century any legislature should be confronting, national and state. But with that said, Vermont is a rural state, and we're a poor state. And people drive a long distance to jobs that don't pay very well. And so to adopt a policy posture that says we're going to on purpose make your fuel in your car and then the fuel that heats your house when you get home, make those two things expensive to the point where you will change your behavior, that's something I'm not comfortable with. So what I would prefer to do myself is continue to aggressively fund weatherization, aggressively fund renewable energy projects, continue working toward, getting the state entirely off of the fuel-based economy as quickly as possible, divestment of our funds, our state treasury funds, I think is a useful discussion that should go forward. But the carbon tax, especially at this moment, strikes me as something that I would have a tough time supporting.
You think the divestment discussion is going to actually happen?
Well, it's been ongoing. Beth Pierce has been, I think, engaging.
Pretty negative on it.
Negative, but also she hasn't, stiff-armed the proponents of it. I think she has tried her best to figure out, is there a way that we can go forward with the proponents' concerns, but not necessarily do divestment immediately. I think that's the kind of thing that sometimes over a session or two, eventually you reach a tipping point and they say, we could divest without losing a lot of revenue, so let's make that final move.
Last question. Do you think there's going to be any sort of continued movement to try to change the electoral system so you avoid what you're going to have happen today?
Oh, yeah. There are going to be a couple of constitutional amendments proposed. Bill Doyle and Anthony Polina have been making a good case for one that would allow the plurality winner to become the winner in fact. Question is what threshold you would use. Would it be 40% of the vote, 45% of the vote? I talked to Senator Doyle yesterday. He seems fine with either of those numbers. He just thinks the legislature should get out of the business of electing the governor. And Bill Doyle is an extremely smart guy. He's been around a long time, and I'm with him.
I wonder, though, I'm almost recalling, though, that he's tried to add things into it, like the four-year term.
Right, I wouldn't say they're poison pills, but they really make it tough to pass. So I think a stripped-down version is the only thing that can get out of the government operations committees, and then we'll have to consider that. If it passes, everybody should understand it needs to go through another biennium and make it through a whole different legislature in order to change the Constitution. I think that was a wise provision because it makes it very tough to amend. But I haven't heard anybody disagree with these ideas in theory, so maybe we go all the way with this.
It's a question of, the heat of the moment now, if you can kind of maintain that. If 6 months from now people say, well, I don't know, it wasn't that big a deal.
Yep. And, honestly, the legislature is a seat of power, and those with power often are reluctant to give it up, no matter
what
it is.
Right.
So I'll be somebody who argues very strongly that we should reform the Constitution in that way. And I think all it's doing is giving complete power to the people instead of, you know, in this case, they have almost all of the power. But in Vermont, as you know, with third parties active here, this is a situation that's not all that rare. So I think we should bite the bullet, get rid of this kind of vestigial remnant of an old system, and let the people pick directly.
Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark.
Senator Phil Baruth is the Senate Majority Leader. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll be back here at the State House after this.
Big mountain terrain, small mountain charm awaits you at Pico Mountain. Centrally located in Killington, Vermont. With 57 trails, 7 lifts, gentle learning terrain, smooth cruisers, and classically narrow New England steeps, even the most selective skiers and riders will be impressed. Buy your lift tickets at Pico Mountain.